I said, by any metric, and you choose your metric, is it unemployment? Is it the number of people working, the participation rate in the labor market? Is it gross national product? Whatever it is, whatever your metric, the American economy is in a place that I've never seen it. Best it's ever been in my life, and maybe the best ever, frankly. That comes on the heels of the signing of phase one of the China deal. Next week, the USMCA deal gets inked. We've also got the deal with Japan. So the four biggest trading partners of the United States get new trade deals within about a week of each other. Unbelievable. Joining me now, Jeff Ferry, chief economist at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here. Good morning.
I mean, listening to folks all over the economic world yesterday, people chiming in, the news couldn't be much better on the economy. And the fact is that, you know, people like Paul Krugman said the economy would collapse and never recover under Trump. It is the polar opposite of that. The economy is going places, and the president doing things that we were told by so many pundits he was not capable of getting done. A new NAFTA, getting the USMCA, forcing China to stop stealing our intellectual property. But he has made big steps in these efforts and has made some big victories, has he not?
Yes, you're absolutely right. These trade agreements are great steps forward. They're very encouraging. They indicate a new attitude to trade, where trade is supposed to help the U.S. economy instead of cater to some sort of globalist vision of worldwide activity. And this is all great. I mean, I want to emphasize, though, that the benefits of the U.S.-China agreement are not going to come overnight. This is phase one. This is the start of a long, difficult process with a totalitarian country that is reluctant to change the practices that it has been executing for 30 years.
Well, at one point, you know, the Dow went up 187 points yesterday. It closed at 29,030. Everywhere I look in this economy, and I understand that it's going to take a period of time to have the full benefit of these trade deals come through, but there's optimism in the market, not only in the market, but there's optimism on Main Street. From Wall Street to Main Street, there's optimism. People are confident. People are buying. It was the best holiday shopping season ever, from what I understand. Again, no matter what metric you use here, Jeff, there are good things happening.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, last year the stock markets were up some 25%. Unemployment is down to historic lows. African American unemployment is at an amazing 50-year low. The economy is chugging along very, very well. I mean, I think, you know, for someone like me who's an economist, it's disappointing that the economics profession and many Wall Street types have waged a constant war against the tariffs. But the fact is, the tariffs have played a key role in bringing China to the negotiating
table.
We've had many presidents identify and criticize Chinese practices. The tariffs are the action that brought them to the table.
Yeah, the tariffs worked. You can complain all you want. Results matter. But I want to bring you to something else that you've written about recently, and that is the U.S. trade deficit at its smallest level in 3 years. Why do I care as a consumer or an American about the trade deficit? How does it impact me?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion about that. The trade deficit is running at some $600 billion a year. Now, what that money represents is money that should be going to purchase American goods, and instead, it's purchasing foreign goods. It's creating demand, revenue, and jobs overseas. And I'd rather see all those funds creating jobs here. Now, right now, the trade deficit is running much better than it was, and that's great. And that's a sign that the fact that we're able to grow at 2%, in other words, grow at a faster growth rate than our allies, our main trading partners, whether you're talking about, as you mentioned, the countries in North America or Europe or Japan, and at the same time reduce our trade deficit, is a sign that the American economy is finally doing the right thing, is redirecting demand back to American producers. That's how you get rich as a nation. I mean, 200 years or 300 years of industrial history have shown that the way you get rich as a nation is by investing in new production at home to serve consumers at home, and we're finally moving towards that goal.
So we're heading in the right direction. And I want to know, Jeff, in your opinion, the new USMCA deal. We had some comments from Steve Bannon here a moment ago. He said this is a change, fundamental change, because it means that North America now is a suitable location for manufacturing so we can compete with China and Asian countries on a more equal playing field, and will be just as attractive in North America because of the deal made with USMCA to be signed next week. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely right. The USMCA helps North America become attractive. We still have to be aware that there are countries like China out there that are massively subsidizing their industries, and we need to keep out their products to the extent that they are subsidizing, cheating, stealing intellectual property. But you're right. The USMCA binds the three countries closely together. It also introduces some path-breaking metrics and rules that will stimulate U.S. production. I'm talking about the content requirements for content that in automobiles and other goods that has to be produced in the United States. And secondly, the what's very interesting are the wage targets that the agreement basically gives to Mexico. And it says, over time, Mexico, you must raise the wages of your workers to that $16 an hour level if you want to continue to have unfettered access to the U.S. market.
Which is, you know, an important consideration, I suppose. I don't know that it is something I would deal with. Why would we dictate to another country what their wages need to be?
Well, look, we have the world's largest consumer market. We import $2.5 trillion a year of imports. If other countries want to have access to our market, they should meet our rules and our standards. And what we're trying to do is to defend and grow our standard of living, which for 200 years has stood out in the world as the best and the most successful. So it's not the right thing to do to give access to countries that say, hey, we're going to pay our workers pennies an hour. We're going to have people working inside prisons and virtual slave labor camps, and we want to sell to America. I mean, you have to look at it in the long-term perspective. Getting a few cents off that toy that you buy for your son and daughter is not the benefit you want if you want to maintain this as the world's wealthiest economy, generating good standard of living for everybody from the lower middle class, the main middle class, and even up to the upper class.
Not even the standard of living necessarily, but working conditions too. It dictates working conditions for workers, not just in the United States, but elsewhere. That's your point, right?
Working conditions and wages matter. I mean, we want to bring the rest of the world. The whole point in general, I think globalization has to be watched very carefully because it can be more negative than positive for us
right.
In the United States. But the benefits of globalization are to bring other countries up, not to bring us down. And when I look at what's happened over the last 20 years to areas like the auto industry, I mean, I'm heartbroken that, you know, that our, you know, Steve, you're and my dad, if they worked in the auto industry 50 years ago, they were getting a better deal than some of the young men and women. Today, we've got a lot of women,
fair
too,
point.
Going into
I got to leave
industry.
It there, Jeff.
And,
great
and
point.
That's a problem.
Great conversation. Jeff Ferry, Chief Economist at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Back after this.
Hey, parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Mom, not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. But a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And, well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.